It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here with the 20H2 update. Yes, it's finally available. We'll talk about how to be a seeker and how not to be a seeker and what may be stopping you from getting Windows 20H2. We'll talk about how Office was installed on some people's computers without their permission. Microsoft says it's a bug. Maybe we disagree. And Azure goes into space? Yeah, that's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company does not have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 695, recorded Wednesday, October 21st, 2020. Azure in space. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, especially with everything you have to consider today. But there's one place where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/windows. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And by LastPass. LastPass can help you manage identities and promote good security behaviors while your employees are remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online privacy with one click for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Go to ExpressVPN.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we get down and get funky with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. It's time to talk about Microsoft. Hello, Paul. Hello, Mary Jo. How are you?
Hello.
Good to see
you. Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically good.
It's a very exciting time in Windows world.
It is.
Is it?
It's a special time of the year.
It's the most. Only happens twice a year.
Oh, yeah.
The new Windows is here. The new Windows is here.
Woo!
This happened yesterday. Microsoft announced it. But that doesn't mean everybody's going to get it if my previous results are any indication of future earnings.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. They figured this out. It's fine.
Yeah, not really. No, it's the same as ever, right?
Seekers are the first group.
And not every seeker will find...
Right. That's right. That's like an Arthurian legend or something.
All who seek do not find.
Yeah.
No,
all
they
that glitters is not gold.
Yeah. Well, for instance, Paul and I were just talking about this before the show. My Lenovo is still at 1909.
Not even 2004. But if you seek, you might be able
I
to get
saw it.
It. But don't do it now.
I did saw it. But
if you're in 2004 and you seek, you almost certainly will get it.
Okay.
Right.
So all the blockers were dealt with.
The blockers, it's the same release essentially, right? Yeah. So the blocker list must be basically identical.
Interesting. Blockers have been dealt with.
I saw Surface Book 3 user yesterday saying, oh, I've got it. So even some Surfaces at least are going to get it right out of the gate, unlike the last release, which had almost no Surfaces getting it for months.
I think they solved all the problems.
Everything's fixed. We're done. The end.
Have a great week, everybody.
Good, because I got a case of Curious Elixir waiting for me at home. I'm ready to drink up.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I got the assortment.
You got it.
I found out what happened.
What?
The first one got damaged in transit, which means there's probably Curious Elixir all over the mail truck.
Yeah.
Because it's a case with 16 bottles in it. I mean, it's a big thing. And they're glass, so I bet you it was a mess. But what's weird is they never told me that until I wrote to them and said, look, guys, you've charged me $88 twice now, and I've received nothing. And they said, the last one was damaged. Well, send it to me now then. So I'm going to have two cases waiting for me when I get home. Nice. I'm so thirsty. Which one should I start with?
Oh.
Which is your favorite?
There's I kind of liked... The orange one.
Yeah, that's the one I thought that's exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You're going to make a creamsicle cocktail? Is that what we're calling it? Well,
now, see, this is the question. These are, they're no alcohol in them. And I think you're supposed to add like seltzer to make them like.
Right.
Because they're concentrated, right?
Yeah. And a slice of fruit.
A little slice of orange on it.
Perhaps.
But what would be so bad about adding a little vodka, gin, or rum?
Thank you. Nothing. Exactly.
A lot of people do. Okay. Like you can see in the comments, people do
just
it.
Just checking. So. Okay. Yeah.
But you don't have to. And
I could have fruit juice if I wanted fruit juice. That's all I'm saying.
No, but the funny thing about these is they don't taste like juice. Like, you'll see what I mean.
They're tart. They taste like shrubs.
They're bitter.
They're shrubs.
To them.
Yeah. We have something out here in California we call shrubs. Yeah. And they're like that. They're bitter herbs.
They would pair well with a gin then, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. Just depending. There's one that's a fake dark and stormy. One that's a fake margarita. One that, you know, so you would put the rum and the dark and stormy and tequila and the margarita and like that, I think. I would guess. How do we get on this subject? I forgot. Oh, yeah. The new Windows is here and I need a drink.
And you need to celebrate it because it's just a minor update to 2004. So if you have 2004, it'll take you like 2 minutes to get.
There's a lot to celebrate.
It really does take just a few minutes. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, that's actually really good news.
But if you're not on 2004, it's going to be just like a regular update.
It's going to be a nightmare. So don't even do it.
Really? No, you're being facetious, well, Paul. Don't do that because the nice people believe you.
Well, look, if you're in 1903 or 1909, the chances of you checking for this thing and actually being offered it are pretty slim.
No, I wasn't offered it. I wasn't even offered 2004.
Yeah. I'm actually on a HP computer doing what you were just doing on the Lenovo. I'm bringing it up to date with HP's support app, and then I'm going to see if I can...
So it's like it's a driver issue.
Almost always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So the first thing to do is make sure you have all the latest drivers from the manufacturer.
Right. Which is why you want to learn on your computer why you would run Vantage. On this computer, it's HP Support Assistant, I think. Mm-hmm. Dell has their own, you know, version.
Yeah. They have to install the Management Engine firmware reversion. Some of this stuff is, I think, probably mitigation for flaws in Intel chips and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sure, sure. Why not?
Yeah. No, it's true. Yeah. No, I mean, literally, yes. Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
Right. No, so they said yesterday, we'll make it available in a throttled way, the way we usually do. So the people who have the known good configurations of a machine will be the ones to get it first, in theory, anyway. Mm-hmm. and then everybody else will get it as things get resolved and unlocked. But if you look at the list of known issues published yesterday for the 20H2 build, it's just a few, like I think it's literally three things that were holdovers from problems with 2004, and none of them are really big. So that's also good. So far, they haven't added new things, although as more and more people get it, they probably will be updating the release information page to include other problems and blockers, or what do they call it? They don't call them blockers. They call them safeguards or something that they do to keep you from downloading it when it's going to have bad effects.
Lane bumpers.
Yeah, bumpers. That's good. Yeah. Bumpers are good.
Yeah. Keep you in the lane.
But the good news is if you want to try to seek it, you can go to so many different channels as of yesterday. So this is something that's a little different. Like, everything got it all at once yesterday, right?
Right.
So WSUS got it, Windows Update for Business, Volume Licensing Center, all these channels that usually are delayed by a few days or even a week or two, they all are supposedly open to seekers now.
I'd like to complain about that because usually they don't do that and it gives me something to complain about. But this time they did it and I feel a little hollow inside, you know, because they did
it's
it
like
right.
It's almost too right.
Yeah, you have nothing to do this week. Just sit
it's
back,
it's
relax.
Weird not having something to complain about.
Oh, you'll find something. I know you.
I'll get there.
I think Paul celebrates it when there's not much to complain about, really, in his heart of hearts.
Well, I will say with this release in particular, it's very minor. There's only, I mean, there are several new features that Microsoft points out. I only think two or three of them are even worth discussing, and none of them are major. And I think that's fantastic. That's exactly what a Windows 10 update should be like, right? I mean, we don't need a bunch of new features anymore. It's kind of silly to pretend otherwise.
Yahoo.
Yeah.
Yahoo.
It's good. It's all good.
Whoa. Nice.
Yeah. I know. It feels so anticlimactic because we were covering
every time
there was a build. And here's this build. Is there anything new in it? Any feature at all? And then when it finally rolls out, you're like, and it's rolling out. Okay. Yeah.
I really, truly think we want this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
I do too.
Finally, you know.
Yeah.
There are a few things in it. We should talk about the few.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Like what?
Thanks.
All right. So Xbox. Oh, I'm sorry. Windows 10. So, I mean, there isn't much. So the new Edge is installed by default.
Right.
So this is the first version of Windows to include that. So if you haven't upgraded and you update to this thing, you're going to get it. So that's a big deal. Honestly, I think the single biggest new feature, and I hate it, but some people are going to love it, is they've changed the Alt-Tab behavior. And Alt-Tab, remember in Windows Vista, they called it Windows Flip briefly, and then Windows Key plus Tab was Windows Flip 3D, and then that name just disappeared. This feature is officially called Alt Tab now for some reason. It's a way to, you literally, you know, you hold down the Alt key, you tap Tab, and you can, as you keep hitting Tab, you'll kind of go across each one of the thumbnails of the open windows in your system, and you can use it to switch between running applications and open windows.
Nice.
It works differently in 20H2, and it's weird. So by default, actually, let me look, because I specifically didn't change it on this computer. I wanted to see, make sure I got this right. Mm. Yeah. Oh, I got it wrong. So by default, Alt-Tab will now include the 5 most recent open tabs in Edge, as well as any open windows. This is very confusing.
Alt-Tab will include the 5 most recent tabs in your browser, Edge.
Right.
In addition to whatever else is open.
Every open window.
Every open window.
So before it was just every open window.
Now they've added browser tabs.
Yeah.
So but only 5.
Well, by default. So you can change this to the 3 most recent tabs are to all tabs or just to open windows, which is the default behavior from previous versions of Windows. I'm going to describe how to do that in a tip. But I'll save the how of that for later. But every time I put this on a computer and I start tabbing, you know, Alt-Tabbing, it messes me up.
And you turn it off right away.
I turn it off.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. Now, there are people listening to this, I know, who are saying, Paul, you're an idiot. This is like the greatest feature they've added to Windows. And you're wrong. It's the stupidest thing that's ever happened. No, I understand everyone's different, whatever. But
I have a theory.
Yep.
I think this goes along with a later story we're going to do about the, you know, the Office PWA thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think it's about staying in your flow, isn't it?
Well, it is. Like, but I think precisely. But what I think it is, web apps, exactly, are part of your flow.
Yeah.
There's less distinction. In the old days, it was just a page. Well, why would I want to go to a web page in my Alt Tab? But now page may be more of an app.
Yeah, email, calendar, whatever, for sure. And that's actually how I access those things. For me, the Alt-Tab, and then, you know, when you're within a web browser, Edge or any other web browser, it's Control-Tab to cycle through the available tabs. And I guess I sort of understand to a normal user, maybe that would be confusing that there's two ways to navigate.
Or they would Alt-Tab to the browser and then Control-Tab to the tab that they would want. People probably have that built into their brain.
I do,
personally.
And also, I mean, remember Microsoft was going to add a feature called Sets to Windows 10, and Sets was going to add tabs to any window. Microsoft Word could have tabs, File Explorer could have tabs, et cetera, whatever. But, I mean, at some point, the proliferation of these open things becomes so great. Like, when the first time you hit Alt-Tab, your windows looks like your screen fills up with this crazy grid of thumbnails. I don't know. So anyway, you're free to configure it as you will. I will say it's one of those things, it's not immediately obvious, but if you use Alt-Tab, you'll notice it as soon as you do it the first time. It's weird. Like, it's, to me, it's very jarring. Like, it's unexpected because I'm used to, you know, like right now, so if I hit Alt-Tab and I hit Alt-Tab and hit Alt-Tab, you know, I go between the Skype window we're using to do the show and then a web browser window. And that to me is very natural. But when looking at it with all those tabs, I want to.
Yeah, because you probably keep a lot of tabs open.
Yeah, I do.
So you then anyway. Are getting, yeah.
You feel right. about this like I do about focused inbox. It's just this immediate, visceral, like,
too much stuff.
Yeah. By the way, I actually feel the same way as you do about focused inbox. I just let you go on about it because it's hilarious that you rant about something and I don't.
I hate it so much. Like, and you know what the worst part is? Can I hate it for one more minute? Because I need to get this out of my system.
I want you to say, Mary Jo, just for me, you know what really grinds my gears? Just for me.
I don't mean to go off on a rant here.
So every single time you set up a new PC, it's there again, even if you set it up, turn it off. And it just infuriates me. Like when I set up the Duo, focused inbox was on. I almost threw the Duo across the room. I was like, are you kidding me?
Well, the problem I have with this is it's not very good. And what you're expected to do is its job for it. So supposed to do is train it. I'm going to tell it which messages are important and which messages aren't.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, after like a few hours, I'm like, you know what? This is your job. If you can't do it, it's turning you off. This is stupid.
And it doesn't work. Like you train it and it still puts your correct messages in the
something important trash. Because it put it in the wrong place. And that is unacceptable.
No.
Yep.
It's a no.
I'm with
you. It's a no from me.
It is the case that because, you know, this is one of the nice features of Windows these days. Your Microsoft account can retain settings between installs. It could be that Microsoft could decide to remember your preference in that regard.
It's hilarious.
Try it again.
But they don't for some reason.
They don't. And this is actually the biggest problem with setting sync in both Windows and Office, you know, the native apps. First of all, there is no place to go and see what syncs. That is the worst. Mm-hmm. It only in each of the case, it only syncs like a tiny percentage of the available settings. Every time, and I review computers. This is a particular problem for me. But when I bring up a computer, I haven't counted, but just aside from what I do in Windows, which is probably dozens of little settings, I also because I write in Microsoft Word, there have to be over a dozen settings that I have to go manually change every single time.
This just in, breaking news. Mm-hmm. I ran the Vantage, updated the drivers, and now I'm being offered 20H2. Was never at 2004. I'm going straight from 1909 to 20H2.
That's a big jump.
So you're going to have it will be at the normal feature update experience.
Right, which is lots of restarts. And
Well, it could be a couple of restarts, but it's going to take a long time.
I'll save it for later.
Mm. Yeah.
But still, that's just a data point to add because you were doing this with your HP. It is the case the blockers were out of date drivers, Lenovo drivers, updating all of those, and the Intel drivers did in fact unblock 20H2.
Great, there you go.
Data point. Thank you.
So that's good.
As you were.
Yep. That is good.
Anyway, so let's see. We ranted about focus inbox.
Sorry, I have a chance to do that, I do.
So. Yeah, no, you should.
Rant you can as have you should. Soon because new Edge, new alt tab behavior. There's a slight visual change to the start menu, which is more noticeable if you're using like the light app mode, or what some people call the light theme. But even in dark mode, if you're familiar with how the start menu looks, there's basically like a box around each of the icons in the all app list, and that's gone now in 20H2. So it's a little cleaner looking, a little bit more like those Windows 10X, early shots that we saw, pre-release shots. Yep. And then in the light mode in particular, even in the live tiles area of the start menu, it looks more blended in. Like it's not as clearly defined squares, although in dark mode, to me, it looks pretty much like it used to, but very, very light visual refresh, I would call that, along with all the new icons, which, had been proliferating in previous versions anyway. But there's something it's kind of vague, but there's a couple of things you can do during setup that will change what appears in your taskbar by default on a first run experience. So if you get a new PC with this version in it or you upgrade to it and you go through that little out of box experience, a couple of setup steps, there's a couple of things you can do that will trigger other apps appearing in your taskbar by default. One of them is if you have a gaming PC, apparently, or I'm not sure how they even determine that, but you'll get a shortcut to the Xbox app automatically. And if you enter your phone number, which, I mean, guys, it's 2020. Have you not learned not to enter your phone number? Seriously. But if you do that, you will see the Your Phone app added to the taskbar. And I understand that Your Phone is Mary Jo's new favorite app.
Is it?
It is. I'm going to rant on this too.
Well, that's funny because
I'm gearing up.
I did install it with, my Fold. So
we'll talk about it on the next segment.
Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters? Yeah. Good.
You didn't mention the ability to change your display refresh rate.
You're right. I didn't. I don't even understand.
Just thinking of things you could add to your short list of new features.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's more. Like I said, there are more new features than I mentioned.
Yeah.
I don't find most of them to be particularly important or interesting, which is great. And that's not a complaint.
Yeah. There's a couple of IG Pro ones. Should we add those? Okay. Microsoft Defender Application Guard is available for Office, not just Windows as of this release. I like this one because I always found this very confusing. The latest cumulative update plus the servicing stack updates that come out periodically are now a single payload. So they're mushing those into one thing, which I think is good because I think that confuses a lot of people when they're like, wait, what's this servicing stack thing that I'm getting? Right. And then I'm getting a cumulative update, right? So you get that as one thing now. So that's kind of nice, handy. I think the biggest thing, though, is Edge being bundled in with the new release.
Yeah.
And have there been complaints about that, or are people okay with that?
I don't know if you know how the tech enthusiast community
is. Yeah. Anything that can be complained about will.
Right. It is. You know, it's funny because Microsoft did get in trouble way back in the 90s for bundling the browser.
Right.
That's not only bundling the browser, that's upgrading to a new browser without your permission. So I understand that maybe the...
But it is, I don't
you
know.
You can't install it, right?
You have to have it, though. That's the way it's been with IE. This is how it's been forever with the... Yeah. Right?
Look, good news is this browser is really good, honestly. If you're a Chrome fan... Yeah. Wouldn't even notice.
You know? Well, and that's another thing I didn't install Firefox. I didn't install Chrome. I'm just going to use Edge and just see.
Yeah. I feel like the reason people got a little irate about this was when they came out with the new Edge, they made a big deal out of it about it being separate from the operating system, separately updatable, and it was no longer part of the OS. And then it actually still is, right?
I mean, it's included with the OS, but it is serviced separately on its own new, more aggressive schedule for Edge anyway. I don't have a problem with it.
I like it. I'm using it and I like it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look.
And you can still download Chrome if you want Chrome.
Right. I mean, I never really used the older Edge. I tried it every version, found it, inadequate for my needs and moved on. But its presence in the operating system is not a problem. I mean, it's fine. Yeah.
But there are some people who are very irate about it not being... I think it is uninstallable, but not easily uninstallable.
It reminds me... I mean, but IE's always been that way. That's not...
Yeah.
It's kind of the way
it is. Hide it. You don't have to see it.
Well,
just put it somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. Where is this in the notes? Because there is a... I got this stupid alt-tab thing on again.
By the way, Apple does that with Safari with its browser.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So imagine, what's the issue here? So imagine if, Safari's probably on version 14 or something. So whatever, the next version of Safari is coming out. And they decided to change the rendering engine to something. It doesn't matter what, right? And as part of that change, they're like, well, let's revisit the user interface and we'll make some changes to that as well, as you would expect in any new macOS version or whatever, or iOS version, whatever, it doesn't matter. I mean, are people going to complain about that too? I mean, I want the old version of Safari. I mean, really?
No.
Is that a concern?
No. But then remember, we Apple users are sheep, and so we're just
okay. But you have a choice. You can choose your own browser, and you can set it as the default. So I just don't see the problem.
Right.
I guess if you're a super fan of the old Edge for some reason. You should have your head examined. But whatever. I guess. That's always a problem in software updates. You know, you ever have like a favorite app on your phone, and one day you open it, you're like, what is this thing? It looks, you know, it looks completely different. The icon changed.
You can really make a strong case that browsers have got to be kept up to date. They're just not.
It's your most used app.
Well,
right?
It's also like the vector for most infections. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah, true.
You really got to keep it up to date.
I'll never remember this for a fact, but this dates back before Windows 8, at least. I mean, the web browser has been the number one most used app in Windows for years, many years. Mm-hmm. You know, possibly, I'm sure, over a decade. So, yeah, it's important.
And it's important to keep it up to date. I really do. That's not unreasonable. And you can have multiple browsers. You know, I understand people are funny. They're very OCD. You know, this is especially Windows users. I mean, they're Windows users say, no, I can't have a registry entry for an app I've uninstalled. I must clean it out.
Yep. My favorite one today is like, I don't understand why the control panel is still in Windows. See, I don't understand why you're looking for it. The control panel doesn't get in your way.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, don't worry about it.
It's there. It's bugging me. It's bugging me. Yeah. Do you use God mode? Because Steve Gibson talked about God mode on Security Now.
I've never. I don't.
It's like an all-in-one control panel. And there's a third-party version that you just have one long-ass list.
Like really a God mode.
It's not God mode. It's just it's a view into control panel.
Yeah.
And Microsoft offers it, but there's a third party that takes it really
good. There's lots of utilities that provide it's like a grid of options. Yeah. You can check off what you want.
Yeah.
They're just reaching into the registry base.
Some people like that, I guess.
I feel like in Windows 10 today, in 2020, that kind of thing is far less necessary than it was in the 9X days or the early.
Well, it is the case that having two different control panels does kind of bother me a little bit. It's like, that's confusing.
Well, but this is a factor of Windows legacy reality. Mm-hmm. You know, that this thing, this is a system that dates back to the 1990s, was a registry, and it still is a registry, of course, you know. So if you think about it, there are multiple ways that you could change a setting, right? There's probably PowerShell commands or app, that's whatever. There are, obviously, you could go right into the registry if you knew what you're doing. You could, there's probably a control panel interface in some cases still for some of them. And then obviously there are settings in the settings app and whatever. You could write an application if you wanted to. There are third-party utilities. It's all kinds of ways, you know, but this is not, look, isn't Unix Linux kind of the same way? I mean, technically anyone could write a little dashboard.
Oh, yeah.
Console reached into the system and changed settings.
There are many ways to do that. Yeah, absolutely.
So
there's not even really a default way to do that in Linux. It's just whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, it's a bug and a feature in Windows that you have lots of ways to do the exact same thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean,
like when I'm trying to describe to somebody, I'm like, so Windows Update history, there's not really an easy way to get there. Try using the search box maybe, because I can't even explain to you how to get to it anymore in Windows 10.
Right.
Like it's kind of hard to find. It's there, but it used to be easier to find, I feel like. But then when you look, there's multiple ways to get there. So
there's all these avenues that Microsoft went down in Windows and then kind of backed off from. Remember, like in Windows Vista, Longhorn, really, these virtual folders were going to be the biggest thing in the world. And we weren't going to have to deal with specific folder locations for things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not really. It's still all there.
So I would like to know, before I press the install button, what's new in H2. Can we take a break and discuss that besides Edge? Have we covered everything, or is there?
We've kind of covered it.
There's nothing new.
The list is so short.
There's not a lot. There's not a lot of high level big features.
Yeah, I think that's what we wanted.
Your icons will look nicer, maybe, if you like the new design. That's about it.
Okay.
Actually, I just say real quick. I mean, for people who listen to this show, watch the show, obviously they've at least tried Edge. They're familiar with the new icon. They understand that it's different, et cetera, et cetera. That might be slightly jarring to your
mom,
family members or friends who are not tech experts or whatever. And that is a little thing. And that's why they do a full screen little animation. Hey, look, we're upgrade, you know, we're cleaning the house or whatever. And, you know, for normal people, that will be not jarring, but it will be something they'll have to kind of settle into, especially if they weren't using Edge. But I don't know. I don't think it's a big deal.
Yeah.
No.
I feel like the new icon is so much nicer than the old one that everyone
it definitely looks nicer.
It's like a nice wave on your screen. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really pretty.
But if you haven't, if you weren't already using 2004, there are a lot of things that'll be different. I mean, the Windows subsystem for Linux 2, and there's a whole bunch of other features that are were part of the first update that you'll get if you are going, you know, from an older version straight to 20H2.
Right. Now, this icon that we were sent, that's...
what is that? Why do you have a Chrome bullseye?
It was the Edge meets Chrome, I think. The listener sent us these. I'm supposed to give you these, but...
Edge meets Chrome, huh?
Well, it's kind of the Chrome, the Google colors, right?
Right.
With the Edge E. They don't actually use... The Edge doesn't use this... icon anymore anyway, but I have one for each of you.
Oh, so it's like a halfway between an
it's
Edge.
It's a mashup.
It's a mashup.
It's a Chrome Edge mashup.
I would put that on my laptop just to mess with people.
It would kind of confuse the hell out
They'd
of people.
They'd be like, what's going on there?
Yeah, maybe just right here. Yeah. What do you got there? What's the new credge?
I can't talk
That's the true credge.
This is the right credge.
It is.
That's probably why they sent it to you. I should find the. I don't think I kept the person's name. I'm sorry, person. Thank you, though. And I'll make sure Paul and Mary Jo get theirs.
Thank you.
What he always says. I'm going to make sure you two guys get yours.
You're going to get yours, baby.
You're going to get it, all right.
Someday to the moon. All right. And of course, once H2 is here, which it is, now we start talking about whatever the next thing is. H3?
That's good. We should talk about what the next thing is.
Windows 20 H3.
You don't actually know what the next thing is because as of today, although, by the way, we've just released the thing, right? Something should have changed in the Insider program, but at some point, the slow ring is going to have to test some version of Windows, right?
Well, hold on because I got to take a break. But
Let's talk about that,
We can speculate.
Yep.
That's a good point.
Yep. Yeah. What's next? I'm going for H3.
I think you're going to be disappointed.
Has a certain ring to it. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you are hiring, God bless you. Well done. Your business is doing well. I'm happy to hear that. You probably are a little rusty, right? But I got a better idea, a better way for you to hire. There are lots of people out there who would love your job. There are the best candidates you've ever seen now are out there. Really talented people. But how do you reach them? Well, I got to propose ZipRecruiter. I really think it's the best way to hire. It's how we do it, and it really works. You cast in a really wide net. You don't have to do anything. One push of the button, and it does that. It also, there's some other benefits that are really remarkable. They have a technology because a lot of people come, a lot of job seekers come to ZipRecruiter and put their resumes up there. In fact, if you are looking for work, do that, please. And then ZipRecruiter's technology goes through, it looks at what your requirements are, looks at all the resumes, and then invites the people who match your needs to apply. So you not only get, you know, more people seeing your listing, you also get actively solicited automatically people to fill the job. And that's why ZipRecruiter works so well. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate. I don't mean just anybody, but a quality candidate within the first day. We did, every time we use it, we do within the first hour or two. I mean, it's really fast. Businesses, this is a tough time. I don't want to ignore that. We got employees working remotely. Some of you restaurants pivoting your business models, you're moving dining outdoors, you're doing takeouts, you're doing catering. We got to do all this for survival, long-term and growth. Yeah. And honestly, I'm very bullish about the future. It's a tough time now, but I believe we're going to do great. Some consumer packaged good companies have shifted to focus more on things like surface cleaners. You know, I love this this company. They do a hand sanitizer. But they also do like shampoos and soaps. But they all of a sudden, the hand sanitizer, they had to crank up production. It smells so good. It's coconut and lemon. I love it. So there's a lot of people changing, making face masks, for instance. All sorts of stuff's happening. But if you're hiring, we need you. We bless you. You're keeping the economy strong. And, of course, all these pivots mean you're hiring new categories, new people, new ideas. That's why ZipRecruiter is so great. I want you to try it out for yourself. You can try it for free if you go to ZipRecruiter.com/windows. It's Windows Weekly, right? ZipRecruiter.com/WINDOWS, you know, just to be specific. You've got enough to worry about. Let ZipRecruiter take hiring off your plate. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. It's time to hire and do it right with ZipRecruiter. I love that. I feel good about that. ZipRecruiter's smartest way to hire. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. All right. I'm
you
still wondering.
You bring up an interesting question.
21H1, 20H3. Let's bring back 21O3. We can do it all. What is the next?
Well, I asked because I'm annoying like that. I said, so after 20H2, Microsoft, what comes next?
What's next?
And they said, you know what? We're only talking about 20H2 right. today.
That's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the day went by, did you ask them the question again the next day?
Yeah. I'm going to ask them every week. You know me. Yeah. I'm going to do it every week till they finally say something. But the rumor, based on sources, is there might not be a 21H1 update to 10, Windows 10. And instead, that might be when 10X for single screens comes out. And then there would only be one feature update next year and possibly going forward for plain old Windows. And it would be in the second half of the year. It would be like 21H2 and then 22H2. But they won't say that publicly. I've heard that's what's happening, but they won't say if that's correct or wrong.
Will they call it TXFSS? Because that would be cool.
I don't like that name, but I like the once-a-year thing.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
And you know, this would have been the perfect week to say that if that is the new way, because IT would love to know that and start planning for that if that is the plan. I can't say definitively it's the plan. I've just heard from sources that's the idea. Right. But I don't know it for a fact. I think they should do that. I think one feature update a year would be perfect.
You can see they might be reluctant at this time to kind of say anything about that. It might imply that something's wrong with the current system or, you know. You're right.
That's what it would imply.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, obviously, the professionals would love to have that information.
They can say whatever they want. Yeah. The current system does not work, period.
Which is why
we're doing this pretend feature update right now as if, you know, we're doing two a year. We're not. It's a lie.
Oh, that's okay. There's a take. So you say this isn't really a feature update. This is just a point.
This is a cumulative update for the previous.
And we're calling it H2, but really.
Yeah. It's an R2 release is what we used to call this back in the day.
They say enablement package, right? Because they still want to call it a feature update, not a cumulative update. So they have to come up with another word for it.
All they're enabling are their lies.
Wow, you are cold. Holy cow.
I think a feature update is a major new version of Windows.
Yeah. The only thing that I can't figure out if they go to one feature update a year is how do they have the first set of people who are like the beta testing pool of mainstream users, which is what you are if you deploy the first feature update, right? Like that's how they work out all the bugs by the time the second update of the year comes out. So if they only do one, what do they do?
First of all, you have a Windows Insider program, right? And so they could do Win 10X in the first half of the year and Win 10 Desktop the second half, but they still could spend that whole year testing that H2 thing. If they said, look, if you want to stay in the program, you got to do 10X, they would lose almost everybody. People want to test the thing they're going to run.
Yeah,
I know there are some enthusiasts out there who are ecstatic to try 10X.
They'd love
to.
But
the truth is, you know, they should do, but they're going to have to do both if they're going to do that system. So that would give them more time to test that actual feature update.
Yeah.
I like it.
Potentially, you know, prepare for some
Maybe they're waiting because this would be a big announcement, right? IT would be like jumping up and down. Like maybe they're just waiting for kind of a lull and then they're going to be, guess what?
They're going to wait till November 3rd where attentions are distracted and then they're going to say, oh, by the way. And nobody will know. Because you know, there are going to be all these hotheads on Twitter saying, oh, you see. And I don't blame them for not wanting to kind of face that.
But you could flip it around and make it a good news thing. Like, guys, you know what? We've been making you take two feature updates a year. But you know what? You've been doing so great with that that we're going to let you just do one.
Or beta tester. You are.
I guess they can't say something like, you know, we've gotten so good at this that we don't really need to do it twice a year.
Yeah. Yeah. They could say that. Or Windows is so perfect as it is, we can just do one update.
Yeah. See, that's, you can't say that.
One of the points of this system was to prove that Windows was more agile, I think is the term, than Android or iOS. It's ludicrous.
Right.
Android and iOS get one major update a year. That is enough. And the end, by the way, I don't know if you pay attention to Android, not a major update every year, right? It's kind of a minor update past couple of years. So fine, that's fine. These things are mature. They don't need to be completely, you know, jumbled up and changed every year.
That could be the approach, right? They could just say, you know what? Windows is mature. And you guys don't really want us to keep updating it all the time. So we're going to listen to what customers said, because we like to listen to customers.
We're all describing things that will never come out of the words of anyone officially.
We know that.
Microsoft, it's just.
I know. You're right. They should let us write the blog post. Let us write it.
Wrongness. You know, they just won't do it. They won't.
They won't. I know. You're right.
It's too late.
I know. But yeah, so we don't know if that's going to happen. I think that that's what should happen. I think that idea has been floated. And I don't know if Panos and team on the client side will say yes. I do know that server and client development going forward has been decoupled. So that's also an interesting clue, right? So it doesn't have to be in lockstep anymore. Every time there's a server release, there's a client release. That doesn't have to happen.
Right? Server releases should be even further apart, honestly, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's all kinds of things you could align here if you wanted to. Microsoft typically has a hardware event in October for new Surface PCs. They could tie that to the, they're all going to ship with the next version of Windows 10, you know?
Yep.
Right. If they wanted to. I don't know. We'll see.
Yep. Hmm. So yeah, we don't know what's next. That's the truth. We don't know.
And isn't that exciting?
No, not knowing what's next. As it turns out, based on about 8 months of experience, is actually not great. it's not great.
So what are they? So they're is there nothing in the Insiders fast ring now or slow ring or anything? There's nothing. It's just empty.
They just haven't changed. So if you look at what each ring, no, they're not rings. What are they? Channels.
Oh, that's right.
They're testing now. They have not. There hasn't been an update. You know, typically, actually, this is right around the time they would do it. They would say, hey, you know, this thing has been completed. So sometime in the weeks ahead or whatever, if you're in whatever channel and you don't want to move on to the next thing, then you might want to disenroll the PC because there's a nice way to do that now. And they haven't said anything. So they're going to have to say something at some point. It's not like they're going to be testing, you know, cumulative updates for 20H2 next month in the Insider program, right? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Could. I mean, it would be, saying, it would as mean I there's said a year that, I was thinking, of testing cumulative updates for the next release. Yeah, could be.
That'd be a little goofy. So,
would. Yeah. I know. I think they need to revamp. If they do this one feature update a year, I think they kind of need to revamp the way Insider program works again.
Right? By the way, you could just go back to the way it was in the beginning, because the point of fast and slow was fast was supposed to get more. And so maybe it came, you know, this wasn't how it worked, but maybe you got one every week and slow would get one every 4 or 6 weeks or whatever. Oh, yeah, never worked that way. But that was literally what they were supposed to do. And I guess the thought there was that some builds would just achieve some amount of testing and it would be determined stable enough that they would be then presented to the slow ring.
Right.
I always thought that system kind of made sense because, of course, we were always working on one version of Windows in those days.
People are testing a fast ring build, the dev channel build, but that build isn't necessarily associated with the next feature release of Windows, right? It's they've made a point of saying it's not actually associated with the next feature release.
Yeah, it's so confusing. Right.
I know. It is. It is confusing the way it is.
Yeah, and those I'm sure all the features that we just listed for 20H2 were originally, tested in the dev channel. And so the assumption was they'll for 21H1 or whatever. And then one day during this process, I don't remember when this happened now, a couple of months ago, whatever, they pushed them all into 20H2.
Yep, I know. I took that as a clue, too, that they were going to have a longer wait for the next feature update, right? Like, that's how I interpreted them doing that.
Yeah, I sort of thought to because we've been trained to think these are for some time in the future. So when they pushed them down to 20H2, it was like, well, that makes sense. These are fairly minor updates. The visual change in the Starman, it's like, well, okay. I mean, why does this have to wait a year? It's not a visual change.
Right. Now, 10X, I don't think from everything I keep asking around about that too, is that going to go out to the insiders through the insider program? I don't hear that it is. I know. So 10X is being tested inside Microsoft, right? Like they're running it on different models of their surfaces. Like it's been hosted on those models, including the Pro X, by the way. So it's also working on ARM now.
Sort of implies that there is little faith in positive feedback for this thing. They actually put it out to the insiders because I have a feeling what would happen is people would say, hey, this thing's kind of on the Fisher Price side. You know, it's not very elegant.
It doesn't run 132.
You know,
yeah.
And rather than face that kind of criticism, they're going to face it when they release it. Without any testing, which to me is just weird. Yeah. I hope they don't do that.
I know. I'm curious how that's going to go and when people will finally see it, you know, in test mode, or will it just be like, ta-da, here it is on a new PC from HP or Lenovo or something, you know? Yep. So, yeah.
At least we got theme-aware splash screens. I'm just thrilled about that.
Goofy. This was so goofy. I didn't even write about it.
I didn't either.
What are they?
So I use dark mode, right? Yeah. So that means that I can't. It's so goofy because there's another thing called themes in Windows, which they can't call them themes, but everyone thinks of it as themes. Mm-hmm. But whatever. It's really is like the system, meaning the start menu, the taskbar, and some other periphery windows can be dark and or light, and then the app windows separately can be made dark or light, and can make them all dark or light, whatever. And so I'm in dark mode. So let me just actually see what happens when I run one of these apps. I don't even know. I don't really see splash screens.
Oh, that kind of splash screen? Not like the booting windows or anything? Just when an app launches, splash screen.
So if you're in dark mode and you load like a white web page.
It can hurt you.
It's like particularly jarring. And so, and actually not, most people probably don't even realize this, but a splash screen will go through a transition of colors that match your accent color as well. There's like a transitionary phase. So Microsoft is making its own built-in apps. I'll call it theme aware, even though they're not really themes. App mode aware, maybe the right way to say it. So if you're running in dark mode, for lack of a better term, the splash screen will support a dark mode as well. So you don't get that flash of light before it settles into the darkness that would, you know, the normal app window.
Yeah.
And feature will or will flash not be coming to a window.
I'm settling in the darkness right now. I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. Settling into darkness.
Okay, there it goes.
Yeah, I didn't write about it either because I was like, I don't even know what that means. I don't, like, when I launch an app, I don't even notice if it has a flash of light.
So actually, right. So in the old days, and actually I can explain it. So in the old days, like in Windows 9X, before you, the main, because the main app window would take so long to come up, they would put up an actual different window that would be Microsoft Word 95 or whatever. And it would sit there for a second and then the real window, it would give you something to let you know it was happening. Now apps come up a little more quickly than that, but because UWP apps are actually kind of slow, that the splash screen occurs within the main app window. So there's a flash of color before the window draws. You can, if you launch like weather, you'll see that.
Yeah, and, I see what you're saying there. Yeah. You know what app has a splash screen? Teams.
That's why.
Because it takes so long when you click on Teams for it to actually launch, if you're not already in it. You see it. You see the Teams logo and everything. Like it is that's a splash screen.
They want it to run silently in the background when you sign in. That's, you know, and then so you kind of avoid waiting for it or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what app doesn't have a splash screen? Notepad. Doesn't need one.
You know what app doesn't have a dark mode support too, Mary Jo?
Notepad? No. I don't care. I don't use dark mode.
My version of Notepad is dark mode support. Just saying.
Can't you just make the type font a light color and pretend it's dark mode or something? You know, like gray it out. No.
Yes, you could do that.
You could. Just saying.
Okay. Where's the fun in that?
Right.
When we can make a whole operating system modify and give us something to say there's a feature in the new...
That's then we'll make this thing called a control panel, and the control panel will let you set all the settings.
You know, I don't know whether to celebrate this or not. I use Chromebooks, and Parallels, which is it's not the best known virtualization solution. I think VMware is, but Parallels has been around for a while. They started with the Mac. Now they're doing virtualization on Chromebooks for Windows.
Yeah, so it's only for enterprise Chromebooks. For now.
So I saw that. What is that? I don't even know what that means. Is that a special kind of Chromebook?
Yeah. So they have to meet certain specs and they're managed by through the Google Admin Console for environments like schools.
That's ridiculous. Because, I meet all the specs. I have a $1,200 Pixelbook.
Yeah. So, but it will be coming to individuals in the future. This is just the first release. So they're doing this in tandem with Google. The interesting thing about this is, of course, you have to have a Windows license, right? So that component has to exist. Parallels, the company, which is actually owned by Corel now, is sort of not getting into the ugliness of dealing with that aspect of it like they have to on the Mac. But for now, you can actually control that through the Google admin console. So if you enable this, it's actually a feature in Chrome OS. You can enable it and you'll actually have an icon for Parallels in your whatever they call the start screen. And then when you click on it, it will download the Windows 10 image that you specify. So it's customized for your environment.
Oh, that's interesting. But you do have to have a license.
You do have to have a license.
So you have handled, a serial
it's
number?
Something the user doesn't have to deal with, right? You don't have to deal with that part.
Okay.
For now. Eventually, it's going to come to individuals. Like I said, the other thing that's missing right now, and this is actually kind of a big deal, is if you're familiar with Parallels on the Mac, you can, I think it's called Coherence Mode, where you can run individual Windows applications alongside Mac applications. You're not running it in a Windows desktop and a window or whatever.
It's kind of what you want. So then I can have my Windows application running just like as a window.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you're on a Mac or you're on a Chromebook, I mean, typically you're not going to run like, a bunch of Windows utility. There's a very specific Windows app or maybe a couple of them that you need. So you want those to appear in your dock or again, whatever they call the taskbar in Chrome OS. But this initial release only supports the entire desktop environment in a window. It's resizable on the fly. It scales and all that stuff. You can run it full screen, but it is a separate thing for now. But they are going to bring coherence to it. So just think of this as kind of like a 1.0 release. It's businesses only. And sometime next year, you'll see all that additional functionality appear. And you'll have to have a decent Chromebook, Core i5 or better. 16 gigs of RAM. I think it's 120 gigs of storage.
The 16 gigs unusual. Of RAM is the unusual, most unusual thing.
Yeah, these are unusual.
And it won't work on an ARM Chromebook.
No, I can't imagine it would. No. Yeah, no.
It's interesting.
What's happening?
One of the things Google's doing with Chromebooks kind of worries me because they're making it more and more like a regular computer. like an operating system? Because you can now have Android apps, Linux apps, and now Windows apps on the thing. Mm-hmm. It's turning into a computer.
Yeah, but they're also erasing complaints, right? I mean, I would use a Chromebook, but I don't have whatever, you know, the app is. And I think they're just trying to address that. Obviously, on a Chromebook, hopefully what you'll be doing is running mostly web apps. But every once in a while, I mean, there's a lot of Android apps, obviously, and some of them are okay. And if one of those solves a problem for you, it's neat to be able to do that. I'd love to be able to do that in Windows, by the way. But, you know, it's a computer, like a PC form factor. So obviously, sometimes people sit down and they're like, well, I should say companies will say, look, we would do this. We want to do this. But we have these apps that are important to some users. Yeah. And this is a way to do it.
Fortunately, there is a way you can run your Android apps on your Windows machine. It's called Your Phone. Although I call it still working on it.
Yeah, me too.
It's not there yet.
Still working on it. In fact, that's I'm trying to load my messages and it's for about an hour. Still working on it.
Yep.
Sometimes it delivers messages. I'm not sure what your bar is, but
working on it.
That's why it's so infuriating, the Europhone app, right? Like sometimes it works really well. And then other times it just doesn't even work.
Do we know what's not working? Is it Bluetooth? So, is it?
We don't know why. Like last week, they made some change in your phone and it had basically, it no longer was syncing, right? So I thought it was just me. I'm like, why isn't your phone syncing anymore? Like all my, like I type something on my PC in the your phone app and usually it syncs and delivers it through my phone. But no, it wasn't. And then I complained about it, or somebody complained about it on Twitter, and they said, oh yeah, you're not running the latest version. You have to be on 20092.123 or higher. And so I checked. I'm like, nope, I'm not. Okay, updated. And then yesterday it worked great. And today, again, it's working like half the time and so not the other half of the time.
It would almost be better if it just didn't work all the time.
Instead of teasing you.
No, because when it works sometimes and doesn't work sometimes, that's so unreliable, you just give up.
I know. You know. And I've already integrated it into my workflow now. So I use it a lot now. Like every time, instead of pulling out my phone to answer texts and pull pictures over, I use the phone app. I like it. But now that it's so undependable, I'm like, oh, did it send? Did it? No, it didn't. Right?
I haven't used this in a while. I every time I test your phone, I end up just disconnecting my phone. I can't stand it. And by the way, the constant notifications on my phone about it connecting to your phone or not being connected to your phone they make me insane. Like I really can't deal with that. I have not used this in quite a while, but when I did use this, and this is probably over a year ago now, if job one is getting messages on the PC and you're using the Google Messages app, which you are, Mary Jo, right? Because you have a Pixel.
Yep. I am.
There is a web app version of that that you can pin to taskbar, and that works great. Or it worked great.
That's what I end up doing, right? Always. Yeah.
That's what I end up doing.
I would look at that because if that's the primary concern, my experience is out of date, but that's what worked really well for me back in, a while ago.
I know. And I really want it to work because I like it. It works well. And sometimes like my phone's in the other room and I'm super lazy and I'm like, oh, let me just use the Your Phone app and answer the text, or I can see a call come through. I can see it on my PC screen. Like somebody's calling my phone.
Writer. I mean, being able to write a text with your, with a real keyboard is wonderful.
It's awesome. I can send so much longer texts, which some people appreciate and some do not.
Yes. Or chapter one.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would like to say to the Your Phone team, I like your app. I want you guys to fix this. It needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know the people involved with this, right? I mean, you could contact them pretty easily.
No, I've been talking to people and I saw yesterday when we were going back and forth on Twitter about this, somebody said it's totally broken on mine on a Samsung phone. And they said, can you do a feedback hub submission and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. I know I'm being a jerk, but I just want it to be fixed.
I talked to them I guess right after the Note 20 Ultra came out, and because I was having a lot of problems with that new feature, the new app feature.
Yeah.
And there are big changes that since then it may be in the process of occurring, and maybe that's some of what's happening right now. But the problem is over a broad period of time, this app has just been kind of flaky, you know?
And they push it like crazy. Now, is the Samsung, should that be the best phone to use with this?
It should be,
right?
Yes.
Because Samsung says it all the time, right?
Yep. No, they have the experience, a link to the PC, right? Like that isn't even available on other phones. It's supposed to make it easier to set up your phone and have it just work. It doesn't work like that.
The only thing that's easier about it is if you look at the notification shade, there's a thing up there that says link to Windows or whatever.
Yeah.
That's literally the only advantage of this whole process. Like the rest of it is just as dumb. Multiple steps on both devices, wizards and okaying things and waiting for the connection and waiting for the sync and wait, you know, it's just
it says it's connected to your PC, connected to your phone app on the T470S. That's this Lenovo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's still working.
Yeah.
No, and sometimes you have to reset it or uninstall it, reinstall it. I'm just like, it just never works.
It's unfortunate because this is such a great idea.
It is.
Like, you know, and this is one of those things that Apple, because they control both device types,
it does very well.
Does a great job of. It's great. Yep. And I know it's harder. And by the way, if you have an iPhone and you're using Windows, you're screwed because Microsoft doesn't do anything for you, really. I mean, despite the fact that there are some third-party apps that do some of that stuff.
But whose fault is that?
Well, the initial fault is with Apple, of course, but... Yeah, no, I know, but, you know, Dell has an app that comes with its PCs that let you connect to an iPhone and do this stuff. I mean, they're doing something, right?
Yep.
I don't
know. Somehow they got around it, right? Yeah. You're right. So, your phone team, I know, we're complaining and we're on your case about this, but it's because we love you and we want you to fix your app.
Yeah, well.
We want to use it. It's a good idea.
Exactly. It's a great idea.
I would say.
My Samsung Edge is sitting right next to my Windows PC.
Yep.
I mean, I can see pictures.
Sure.
That's good. At least you can see that.
Yeah. I can see.
But you'll have these. You'll have wonky experiences. One day you'll be sitting there on your computer, and 127 text notifications will come through, and they'll all be from August or something.
From days ago. Like or months.
It's really strange.
I know. Yep. I know. They're doing so many things right. Like they're making it easier to manage multiple accounts. They're doing all these right steps. Yeah. And then I'm like, but first you're just going to make it consistently work and be dependable. Because when it's not dependable, I don't use it because I can't count on it. Right.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm sure we're doing it wrong. I'm sure we're going to hear from people who say, it works great for me.
A lot of people say it's awesome. I never had a problem with that. I don't know why you're having a problem with it.
Right. Sorry. I've talked to the people that work on this. It doesn't work. It's not you. It's not me.
Brand new Windows install here. Brand new phone, a Samsung Galaxy Fold. I mean, you know.
Yep. That should just set up right.
It should just
easily.
Work. Yeah.
It should.
It does this, as you say, it sort of works. Like I see a notification says it's connected.
When it works, you're like, yes, this is exactly what I want. It's great. Yeah. And then they come up the next day and it's like sync, Fitbit sync is like this, you know, just want to sync the data to the phone.
Right.
Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. Computers are a pain in the ass.
That's why we all have jobs.
Are designed to raise our blood pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make us crazy.
Now, people's blood pressure were hot, where it's definitely up over the past week. And I thought, well, I understand people don't like stuff installed on your system, but I thought that was pretty cool. Office apps, the web version of the apps, were being installed on insiders' PCs. And then the program expanded. So what happened? Yeah. What was going on there?
It must have been so successful that they put it out to everybody.
So this didn't happen to me. Did it happen to you, Paul?
No, I manually installed them just to see what it was like.
I would it. I mean, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Because we were talking last week about how great the web apps were.
I know. The web apps are really good. They are. But people who didn't have them installed started seeing in their start menus, these apps show up, but the icons were really tiny. Like you could see it was Word, but the icon was like small, right?
That's right.
And then everybody's like, wait, I didn't just install that. Something just installed it for me. And that's what people don't like. They don't want something to do it on your behalf without you saying, okay.
In fact, that's the definition of malware, but
it is.
Yeah.
It is. Or,
yeah.
Right? But it turns out, I think, and the reason I'm saying I think is because Microsoft won't say what is going on. Like I've asked multiple days back to back, just being the super annoying person I am, keep asking the same question every day. I just resubmit the same email to PR every day and put a question mark at the top. So they wouldn't answer, but I talked to some people, you know, sources.
I got an answer. Get an answer.
You did? Yeah. They wouldn't give me an answer. They just said, well, you should ask around because people know what's up. But yeah. Okay. What'd they say to you?
It's a bug.
It's a bug
with Edge.
It's with that. Well, because Edge is the host for these kinds of apps. I actually don't think it was a bug. Just to be clear, I think they intended to do this, and the reaction was way more negative than I thought it was going to be.
In other words, it was a bug like my Twitter was just hacked, kind of a bug, right?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
The bug was in the code that should have protected you from hackers. think about it this way. You have these icons in your start menu now, right? Like Mary Jo said, they're small. They're kind of goofy looking, right? So they're like little tiny icons that you don't see anywhere else. If you know where, like if you already have Word on your computer and you know where the EXE is, you can pin that thing to your start menu or your taskbar and you can change the icon to and you can get like a full icon if that's what you want, you know. But I mean, of course, the point of this thing is you shouldn't have, if you have Word, why would you be installing the web app? But the goofy thing is, if you, like I've done it, I pinned the Word app. I was thinking about writing about this. Like, so I have the Word web app pinned to my taskbar. And it comes up and it looks a little bit like Word. It's got templates I can choose from, recent documents, whatever. No matter what I choose, it doesn't open in that window. It opens in a new tab in my main Edge window. So what is the point of this?
What's happening there, right?
That's stupid. So now I have six icons. No matter what I do, if I launch one of those things, whatever it launches from there is going to go into my main Edge window. So
that's really bad.
This doesn't behave like a standalone app. It's stupid.
It's really bad. Yeah.
It's
behaving like
maybe,
a PWA.
Maybe that's the bug. Right? That must be the bug. That's probably the bug.
Yeah. But
we didn't mean to roll this out.
Installing it wasn't the bug, but the behavior was the bug.
The icons and the way it launches in tabs. Yeah.
It's buggy.
So I heard they're going to halt it, right? Like they're going to halt doing this. So they obviously know it's happening because it's going to be halted. And they're going to try to fix it. But what's the fix look like to this?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But they're going to say, because we're not installing an app. We're installing a bookmark, basically. But I don't want, for instance, I go through, and I've already done it on this new install, the start menu and delete all of the tiles. I just want an old-fashioned start menu. So that would reintroduce, and I'd have to go in and delete those tiles. I don't want that behavior.
Yeah.
Right.
I already have Office. I pay for Office. Why would I want an icon to the PWA? If you didn't have it, that'd be kind of, I guess that's nice to let people
know. It's weird because this is another thing I haven't tested yet. If you are not paying for a Microsoft 365 subscription, what can you do with one of these Office web apps? I think you can do some stuff. Like, I don't think it's just viewing. I think it does do light editing or whatever. I think there's...
You can.
I think so. So... Okay, so you could make an argument like you get a new Windows 10 PC. There's no Microsoft 365 on it. So during some cycle of Windows Update or whatever it is to the App Store or whatever, they would throw these icons on there as a way to get you to maybe try them, and it would run as a standalone web app window, and that's fine. I really honestly have no problem with that. Like I think some people would, but you can, of course, remove them if you don't want them. That's fine. If you have Microsoft Office installed, if you have a Microsoft Office 365, to be clear, consumer subscription, because you do have access to the native apps, should not install these things, right? You have more powerful apps on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is kind of an edge case, pardon the pun, but because I test a lot of computers, you can only technically have, I don't know, five or six computers associated with your Microsoft 365 account. Mm-hmm. So it would be kind of cool for some of my lesser used computers to just have those web apps be there. It would be attached to my account. I would see all my recent documents, and I could use the web apps on those computers. But that's not enough of a use case to think that Microsoft would ever accommodate that. But I don't think they're working as intended, and I think that's the bug. Icons are wrong. I think the way it opens in new tabs is wrong. I think they're supposed to work like a standalone app, and they don't. And I think that's the problem.
Yeah, I agree. So I don't have the Office standalone apps installed because I have a version of Office 365 that does not include the full apps because I don't need them, right?
That's a commercial account, right? So when you sign into your computer, do you sign in with your commercial Microsoft 365 account? Or how,
no.
Do you?
I don't.
Oh, you don't. So you could make the case that if you did, this would be a cool thing to install on that computer because it would see that the type of account you had, and it could put the web apps in there, and there you go.
So when I got my Surface, when I got my Surface, they were there, right? Like when I set up my operating system, they were there in little icon form, all within a tile. Like all the apps are there, like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Note, and Notepad. So when you click on that. Yeah, when you click on that, it expands them into full-size icons on the start menu, Outlook, Word, Excel, and OneNote. Right. So for me, that's what I want. I want those to work like that. But I don't think most people want that automatically there. You know? Right.
And most people are people who have their own Microsoft 365 account or don't, right? And there is no such thing as a consumer account that only gives you access to the web apps. Maybe there will be. Maybe there should be.
Yeah. Maybe there will be. Right. That's a good point. Maybe this is a preparation for, I mean, there's a thing that I always call office.com, which is the Office app, right? And that gives you those apps as PWAs, right?
Yeah, they are. That's what you're installing. That's what we're worried about there. Because one of the app icons you get is for something. This is called Office, and it's a little bit like the Office native app that you can get in Windows, which is probably a React app anyway, I guess. But when you run that, it's office.com.
So you know what's so confusing to me, and now I'm starting to wrap my head around it. The Office web apps are not the same as PWAs. Even though they both are web apps.
Well, now they are. They're PWA. So if you go to office.com and you run Word, right?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is such a weird default behavior compared to what it worked like the way it is on Windows. So if you run Word on Windows, you have the app and you start a new document. Yeah. Nothing's created, right? Automatically. Right. Nothing is. No, right. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I probably customized
it. It lets you choose a blank document. As a type,
I know that, but it's not written to disk anywhere. But actually, it probably is because that's something I change in Word. So when you run Word on the web, you've created something called Document One in the root of Documents folder in OneDrive, which is goofy. But and I think the point there is at any time you could click the close window and lose what you were working on otherwise, and so now they're auto saving it, right?
Yeah.
So I don't like that behavior personally. I change it in the native app. But if you test this, you can have a lot of documents up in OneDrive.
Yeah. So when I open the Office web app version of Outlook, Outlook's not a good example. When I open Word, right, the web app version of Word, and then I open the PWA version of Word, they don't look the same.
They should.
No, like even the menus look different.
Really?
Yeah. It does.
Well, see, the problem is this isn't working correctly. So if I do this and I choose blank document.
Yeah.
Actually, that does open. It's so goofy. All right. It comes up with that. It's super bright. Sorry. But it comes up with that simplified ribbon. So to me, it looks a little bit like the, that old mobile app they used to do.
Yeah.
So you're saying... I don't know. I think this is the same. No,
for me, they're not the same.
Oh boy.
Yep.
All right.
They look different. Like the side menu on the left on the web app. I mean, I'm sorry, on the PWA does not exist.
Yeah. Okay. No, I can explain it. So that's only because you're in – this is the behavior I was describing earlier. You get that – like the list of icons on the side for Excel, PowerPoint, whatever. If you click one of those things, new window – new tab comes up in Edge, not in that window.
Right.
These PWAs are not correct. There's something wrong with them. Like they're not okay. Right. Like,
so it shouldn't look like that, right?
Yeah. So let me clarify what I said earlier. So if you – if you open Word, Excel, or PowerPoint, and you choose a recent document, Edge will open, and it will open that document in a tab. If you click New Blank Presentation or Document or whatever the choices are, or choose a template, it actually does open in that window. And then it looks exactly like the web app version if you go to, in your browser. The reason is the thing you're looking – it's what this – this is kind of goofy. It's like – you're actually looking at the office.com web app, PWA.
Right. Yeah.
That's why you see all those choices. It's meant to emulate the Office app in Windows 10. It's not working correctly, I think is the simplest way to say it.
Okay.
It doesn't work correctly. Yeah. It works, but it doesn't work correctly.
Got it. So they got to fix that, hopefully.
Yeah. Have we confused everybody yet?
I know. I am so confused. When I was trying to write about this, I couldn't even explain it to myself. I'm like, what am I talking about now? A web app?
It's confusing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's confusing. It's not working correctly. Okay. Basically.
Yeah. I really still am not sure I understand it. And then I made the mistake of asking Microsoft. I said, so are Office web apps meant to all look and feel like PWAs? Like, are they the same thing? And they sent me a link to a blog post that had, I don't think it had anything to do with that, but I'm like,
you're like, just keep her busy. We can go home for the weekend. We'll reconnect on Monday.
Maybe I didn't explain what I'm trying to ask you, but I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, so if everyone who's listening and watching is completely confused, so are we. Just know it's
I fully expect for this picture to flip to Leo, who's either fast asleep or installing Linux again on his computer, because seriously, what the hell are we talking about?
What are they trying to say?
I know. I'm sorry. So sorry.
No, I'm a fan of progressive web apps.
I am too, but this situation, it's just confusing. The way this has happened is confusing.
I got some really bad news for Mary Jo. Your phone is working now, and it's awesome.
I know.
And it's working completely reliably. You know what it was?
That's good.
On this Samsung anyway, there were a series of permissions that weren't getting triggered. You know, your phone's supposed to pull them up and then you say allow. So I kind of went through it and I finally got all the permissions. I can't show you because it'll disconnect from the internet. Right. But I see that's my phone screen. That's my photos. It's all working.
That's good.
But Leo.
It's here's beautiful.
Tell us tomorrow if it's
still the other thing that's cool is
next Wednesday.
When I open it up, it's showing the big screen. When I close it shows the little screen. It does the fold just right.
I know.
Now it's saying use your fingerprint or enter PIN. This is pretty cool.
It's awesome when it works, but tomorrow check it out. You
just identified where some of the problems with this app. So for example, there's no pass-through authentication. Like, why you have to go to your phone to sign in when you're running it on your computer,
right?
Which is goofy.
Well, no, that's not true. I could enter the PIN on the computer.
Okay, you could enter the PIN.
I can't do the fingerprint.
But you have to authenticate it. Is the point every time? As if it's based on the state of the phone.
Yeah, it goes to sleep, and then I have to go back and say hello.
So when you say like I'm running an app from my phone, this suggests that you're running an app on your phone. What you're really doing is running a remote desktop instance of the phone.
Yes, and it has to be on the internet. For instance, I'm running Authy now, and it's running on the phone. It's not running on the screen, though, so that's too bad. But
that only works on Samsung devices right now, right? He's doing.
Yeah,
but it's pretty cool, and I can swipe up with my mouse, and it now goes back to the home screen. I mean, it's kind of interesting.
We can't ideally, do that. With
if
the
I
pixel.
Had a touch, I don't have a touch laptop, so I can't. Do touching, and that's not it. Honestly, mouse is not as good. Touching would be really nice. I think I'm going to buy some more Windows computers.
Wow, this is what sold you.
All I needed was a $2,000 phone, and life is good.
Well, Yeah. I mean, eventually it's going to support the ability to arbitrarily run multiple apps in their own windows on your PC, which would be very useful. And then Android apps have the ability to change their, you know, their look and feel based on the size and characteristics of the screen.
Right.
So you should be able to take an app that has like a window, I'm sorry, a phone form factor, like a portrait
thing. And make it
a
big screen.
Drag it out and have it be like a tablet, you know.
This looks pretty nice, actually.
It's really nice if it works the way it's supposed to. It's awesome.
I think the issue really was a permissions issue because there's a significant, there's six permissions or something.
Yeah.
No, but it's not, no, what's going to happen is it's going to be
it's
a week
fail
now
again.
Or 2 weeks now.
Okay.
Yeah. That's
all right. Every week we now have a new feature on
your
Windows
phone
Weekly.
Liability of the week.
Your phone, is it working?
Yeah, or not.
Or not.
Right. Countdown to Leo giving up on your phone.
Well, you know, I was going to take bets on how long before I put Linux on back on this thing, but you know what? I'm kind of I hate to admit this. I'm kind of liking it. I like the your phone.
Your phone's great. It needs to work. Other than that, it's great. Yeah.
You need a Samsung, maybe, Aunt Mary Jo.
Yeah. I wish I liked Samsung phones. I don't really like them.
Oh, you know, this is only $2,000.
Yeah, I know. A mere $2,000.
She couldn't have returned it more quickly if they had paid for it.
You kept the Duo. I'm surprised you're keeping the Duo. I turned.
No, I'm not keeping the Duo.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
No. No.
Yeah, the Duo was not really not ready. Now that I'm using the Fold, I mean, still, I wouldn't recommend anybody spend that kind of money on this phone. It's fragile as heck.
Right.
But, and you know, already the screen protector on this, I don't even know if I can remove the screen protector, but already it's a little dinged up. And it's like, well, I think you're supposed to send it to Samsung and they put a new one on. So... Yeah, I mean, but with a Samsung device, your phone kind of makes sense. Look, I just got a tweet from my phone, and I can respond to it.
I know. It's awesome.
Wild.
Yeah. Mm. We're rooting for you, your phone team. You just got to get this worked out.
Look at that. So, but every time it's on a virtual desktop. So when I leave the desktop, it puts the phone asleep. The phone becomes active. When I go back, it then says, trying to reconnect. But it did reconnect. Took a second or two.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, we'll talk to you next week.
Exactly. That's all I want to hear what you think next week. We'll how did it go?
I can't wait to hear about your week of success.
Now I'm thinking maybe I should buy one of them new Windows PCs. Yeah.
Sure.
Which one would you get if you were? I like the Spectre. We talked about this last week. The Dell you like a lot. The Dell XPS.
I love I like the business class HPs, like the EliteBooks. 840 is beautiful. The 1040 is my favorite still somehow. Actually, the HP NV15 is fantastic.
That Acer Spin, the 2-in-1, looks pretty nice.
The new one.
Dell XPS 15, beautiful.
Gosh, there's some nice choices out
there. What about the new ThinkPads? They're pretty nice.
You know, that's really, I'm a ThinkPad guy.
Yeah.
You know.
All good. They have 13-inch versions now. They got obviously the X1 and Carbon and Yoga.
Yeah. My daughter has my old Yoga. I had a second-generation Yoga. She has that. And my my ThinkPad Extreme, X1 Extreme, is in accounting, where it's probably put to much better use than I would have put it.
That's a good place for it.
Yeah. Actually, let's take a break, shall we? I got to pay for a new computer.
Yeah.
Look, it's still doing it. It's still doing it. It's still my phone. It's still my phone, kids. It's so beautiful.
I hate to see your heart broken the way it's going to be.
I know.
So you're saying this is
nice to see you happy.
This is the thing where it works a little bit, and then tomorrow
it
won't work.
To get excited about it, and then it stabs you right in the back. We'll see.
It even says I'm getting 5G. That's a
lie.
Sure
you are.
Yeah, that's a lie.
Does the 5 have a little air quote around it?
Yeah.
Our show today is brought to you by LastPass. And you know, I hope you know by now, I am a massive LastPass fan, especially because they've been such great partners in 2020. It's been a tough year for all of us, of course. But LastPass, you know, they bought studio naming rights, which really helped us make payroll. They've helped us stay secure. We sent a lot of employees. We're working from home. That's scary. You know, this is a tough time when your employees are going home. They're taking the keys to the kingdom with them, the passwords to your bank accounts, your QuickBooks, your databases, your customer lists, everything. It's not really a surprise that LastPass has been growing so much during this era, this work from home era. Now 70,000 businesses. They're smart. That's a smart thing. We've been using it for 5 years. I've been using LastPass for a dozen years. That's how long they've been around. Now 25 million individual users. Identity and access management, that's what they call it. And it's challenging in this work from home environment. It's not just, you know, getting a computer and a desk to your employee's house. It's getting them secure. LastPass is a saving grace. We were able to use LastPass to set up, use, and share strong passwords. Share is important. You don't want employees, because, you know, they're not sitting next to each other anymore. They can't whisper it. So they're going to text it or email it in the clear, and that's dangerous. LastPass has password sharing built in. We use it all the time. Big step toward improving data security. It also really helped ease the burden of the shift, because I think our employees, they've used LastPass for a long time. We actually give them LastPass premium as a benefit of employee. So they have it at home. They use it at work. So I think they already know how great LastPass is. You know, first brand new install Windows on this Lenovo. First thing I install, of course, LastPass. I install it on Edge. Works great. And now all of my passwords, they just fill. I can autofill them. Same thing on this brand new Fold, the Galaxy Fold. First thing you install, LastPass. First thing. LastPass does more to make your life easier and more secure, and I think that's really great. Enterprise password management makes sure that you have the oversight of shadow IT. You have enforceable policies, more than 100. We enforce, for instance, several of these. Like, we say all our employees have to use two-factor. We say we have a minimum password requirement form for their master password. Actually, it's more than two-factor. There's multi-factor now, including not just fingerprint or face recognition, but even contextual stuff like GOIP or location. That's huge. IP address. And LastPass uses something that's all the rage right now, what's called a zero-knowledge model for security, which means you assume, you know, in the old days, we'd assume if you're inside the network, you're safe. Well, now, especially with people working from home, everybody's outside the network. But really, the assumption should be everybody's a potential threat, inside or outside the network, and they have to authenticate to use your stuff. And that's how LastPass works. Your security is their top priority. All the buzzwords, of course, AES 256-bit encryption. To prevent brute forcing, they use PBK DF2. They use salted hashes, SHA 256. Your data is never decrypted anywhere but on your device. It's always decrypted and encrypted on device and every device, iOS, Android, Windows, Mac, Linux, every browser. Yes, it works great on Edge. So your vault is always encrypted. In fact, LastPass doesn't, they never even transmit the master password. Only you can open it up. LastPass has won 8 awards so far this year. They've really become one of the unsung heroes. I guess we should say sung heroes of 2020. They got PC Magazine's Editor's Choice, Fortress Cybersecurity Award, Business Insider's Best Overall Password Manager, just to name a few. I saw a couple more yesterday. But you don't have to take my word for it. LastPass speaks for itself. Just use it, please. You'd be doing yourself, your employees, a favor. You can thank me later. If you're not using it at work, LastPass.com/twit. No better time to get LastPass. Ease the burden for yourself and your remote workforce with the cybersecurity protection you need, especially now with this work-from-home thing. LastPass.com/twit. LastPass. Thank you, LastPass, for making 2020 not so awful. That's the best we can hope for. Not so terrible.
Slightly less crappy.
Slightly less crappy. LastPass.com/twit. Really a great sponsor as we come to you from here in the LastPass studios. You can see. All right. On we go with the show. Let's talk about hell. It has frozen over again. What are you talking about?
Here.
It's Credge on Linux. Yay.
Yep. A little bit of confusion about dev this. Channel build. So it's early preview, a available as of yesterday.
The primary confusion I saw is why?
Right.
For web developers.
So you could test it on that platform. If you're doing web dev on Linux, you want to be able to make sure it works on all the main browsers. That makes sense.
Yes. Well, and I think a lot of web devs using Linux are using Visual Studio Code. Mm-hmm. This is how we get them, Leo. You got to get in the door.
Yep.
Love VS Code, as you know.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, it's here. There's not much more to say. It supports many of the major Linux distributions.
There is one major thing to say. What? It is very early, as you said. And one of the features that's not there yet, which is kind of a big one, is the ability to sign in with a Microsoft account or an Azure Active Directory account. So it's so you can't sync anything. It only supports local accounts right now. Obviously, that's going to change over time, but that's a weird limitation of this first preview.
Yeah, but otherwise, it was the last platform they didn't have Credge on, right? Because it's on Windows 7, 8. 0.1, 10, Mac OS, and there's something they call Edge on iOS and Android.
But it's just
not the exact same
WebKit.
You know what?
Yeah, you're not allowed to use anything but WebKit on iOS.
But the point of that is, to me, is to get the syncing, right? Your bookmarks.
Yeah. Yep.
Whatever. So, I mean, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all you're going to get anyway.
It's not what I would want, but it's better than nothing.
Yeah. No, I'm sort of being facetious.
But sort of. Just a little.
I think this quarantine is really hanging on you. You've had a couple of rants today.
Yeah. She's turning into Paul Thurrott.
Yeah, what's going on here?
No. There's barely room for one of me.
Now, I don't understand this next thing at all, so you're going to explain it, I'm sure.
I can explain it in a way that will totally make sense.
Chromium-based WebView 2 starts rolling out for Win32.
Yeah, so this is a developer feature. It's a way to get web technology into native Windows apps. It will eventually be made available on .NET, meaning Windows Forms and Windows Presentation Foundation, and in WinUI 3, which is the project reunion, what UWP is becoming, right? So eventually this will be a way to get web content into any Windows, any modern, semi-modern, actually not modern, just any Windows app, because it supports Win32 C++ if you're doing that for some godforsaken reason. So what's the point, though? What is this? I think it was last week or maybe 2 weeks ago we talked about this thing called One Outlook, and that Microsoft was going to retain all of the many clients that it has. There's an Outlook client on Windows. There's one on the Mac. There's two on mobile. And then there's two on the web. And they're all different. But they want to add the same features to all of them. How are they going to do that? They're going to do that through web technology, React, et cetera, et cetera. The way they're going to get that same exact feature on every one of those clients is through this control, the WebView 2 control. Essentially, I mean, it's on Windows. So in other words, when you go to Outlook for Windows, the full fat client that we have as part of our Microsoft 365 subscription, and you go into the meeting experience where you're trying to schedule a meeting and you can see everyone's availability, that's a React web component. It will be supplied in the future via this thing. That's how they're going to get it in Outlook. So it's a feature for developers. In the old Edge, this thing was based on the old Edge rendering engine. In the new Edge now, this new WebView 2 thing is based on the Chromium-based version of Edge. So they just released the 1.0, first initial version. Right now, it's only Win32, meaning C++ apps. I think I don't have the exact schedule in my head, but by the end of the year, I believe, is the .NET stuff, .NET version. And then sometime, whenever WinUI 3 ships in the first half of next year, they'll add that version for WinUI 3 as well.
Okay, whatever you say, Paul.
Slightly less confusing than Office PWAs?
Yes.
Related, though.
I seriously feel bad for anyone who just listened to that. It's so stupid confusing because it doesn't work, and I'm looking at it as I'm talking about it, but I can only imagine to someone listening to it, that it sounded like I had a stroke. Like, it just didn't make any sense.
Like, I barely even write about it. It was so hard to explain what was going on. And
sorry.
I know.
Doing the best I can here, folks.
All right.
It's a pandemic.
Good news. We're putting LTE on the moon and Azure in space.
Not exactly. It sounds good, though, right?
It does.
Putting it in space.
Yeah.
So AWS, Azure's biggest competitor, a few months ago announced they were going to have their own space industry strategy, and they called it Aerospace and Satellite Solutions, which to me is a name that makes a lot more sense, because the customers of these kinds of things tend to be satellite companies and other large businesses that care about having satellite connections to their applications. So the one biggest difference between Microsoft's strategy, which was announced this week, and Amazon's, is Microsoft's not trying to make their own satellite network, unlike AWS, right? AWS has a satellite venture that competes with Elon Musk's SpaceX, and they call it Project Kuiper. But Microsoft and their announcement...
Kuiper? K, is it
K-U-I-P-E-R.
Yeah, Kuiper. It's the Kuiper
belt.
What
is Kuiper?
It's the asteroid belt.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
In the, it's the Kuiper belt is in the equilibrium position. It's a circumstellar disk extending from the orbit of Neptune to 50. It's way out there.
Way out there.
It's similar to the asteroid belt, but it's far larger.
So it's not, the asteroid belt, that's what, between Mars and Jupiter, probably?
Yeah. Yeah. The Kuiper belt. It's a Dutch word. You should know that because of the beer.
It's actually the name of a brewery in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
It probably is, right?
Yeah.
So Project Kuiper, now that I know how to pronounce it, it competes with SpaceX's Starlink project.
Oh, that's exciting.
So AWS is competing with Elon Musk. Microsoft is partnering with Elon Musk. If I were a betting person, I would say pick strategy B.
Yeah.
Partner with Elon. Well, don't try to take on Elon.
There's room.
There's room for two.
There's room. Remember.
Yeah, you think so?
Who's richer, Elon or Bezos?
Well,
I know. Bezos is richer. Who's crazier?
Bezos. He's the doctor, no.
He's crazier, really? But he Elon keeps it Musk. To himself. That's the only difference.
He's a monocle and a Cheshire cat away from being a Bond villain.
He pretty much is. He is.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet against Jeff Bezos in any case.
No, I wouldn't. But I also wouldn't bet against Elon Musk.
No, that's why we're lucky. We got them both, and they should fight it to the death. Yep.
No, so Microsoft's initiative is all about partners. So they made a big deal out about partnering with SpaceX. And they're going to be creating a lot of other products that are in this portfolio. So they've got something they announced at Ignite called Azure Orbital, which connects satellites to Azure. And then they've also got something for for enterprises called Express Route for Satellite, which is to help customers communicate to remote Azure locations using satellites. So, yeah, they're going to be building up this whole portfolio of these kinds of networking technologies for Azure so that they can address the needs of the companies that are doing satellite communications, pretty much. Now, the most interesting part of this to me, and the part that got the most crazy interaction on Twitter, was as one of the new products in this family, Microsoft announced something called the Azure Mobile the Azure Modular Data Center, MDC. Yeah. So this is Azure in a container that you put on the back of a semi-truck.
Wow.
And you roll it to a customer location.
Facebook did this, and Google had the barge. There she is.
As Sun, remember Sun having Project Black Box?
Yeah.
Way, way back.
And it was the same idea, it was a container.
All the Sun people came out of the woodwork yesterday who we haven't heard from in decades. And they were all like, you know, that's cool. Microsoft copied Sun. This was Sun was first. I hope. Why didn't you mention that in your article?
How long are their beards, these former Sun workers?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I had totally forgotten about the Sun Project Black Box. So I'm like,
province of the Oracle Empire.
Sun. Yeah, okay.
Right. And By the way, Microsoft, I also forgot this too. Microsoft did try this before. Microsoft and a lot of the other cloud companies at one point were building their own data centers with containers, like shipping containers that were self-contained units with power and storage and all this. And Microsoft and others backed off that, and they decided that wasn't the way to build out your data center. So a lot of people were being skeptical yesterday saying, yeah, okay, they tried this before and it didn't take off. So, you know, they're just going to drop this modular data center thing like a hot potato. You already know that's going to happen. I don't know, guys. I think this might stick around because the way they're treating these modular data centers is they're like an edge computing device almost, right? It's got your power, it's got your heating, cooling, and if you want, you can run it disconnected or you can run it connected using Elon Musk satellite or SES satellite.
That's interesting. I get
hold on.
Yeah,
you had trouble with Office PWAs, but as you're in space, as you're in a truck,
in on this. I'm super interested in the modular data center part because I asked, I said, so what operating system is it running? Is it running Azure Stack Hub? And the answer was yes. But then they said, but if it's disconnected, that may not be the case in the future. So that makes me think this is the testing ground for Azure Stack Fiji, which is unannounced, but it's like AWS Outposts. And it's going to let Microsoft take racks of servers and give them to customers to run in their own data centers.
This is a company that cannot successfully update Windows 10 twice a year. But we think that them putting Azure into an asteroid belt up by Neptune, no problem.
No big deal.
We have no problem with this.
Okay. All right. Just checking. This just tells you where
they're not putting it in the Kuiper belt. It's just called Kuiper.
No, Kuiper is AWS's, not Microsoft's.
We're not going to send a container.
It's not going to be in the asteroid belt. It's going to be above Earth.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's a pretty cool idea.
I'll retract that complaint, and I'll replace it with, I'm in rural North Carolina,
yeah,
and I get a 2G connection on my phone if I'm lucky. Yeah. But we think Microsoft from space, this is going to work.
Yeah. Nope, it's going to work. It's like the evil geniuses are all together.
We got to do stuff like this. And it's not nearly as wacky as, let's say, a quantum computer. So we got to do stuff like this. I mean, this is how the future happens.
Because, you know, quantum is occurring without our knowledge.
Because we can't explain quantum, but we could explain Azure orbital.
This is just like what's in the Earth, except it's in space. Right?
That's it's so actually satellites connecting to ground stations running Azure services, nice. Right? So,
wow, that's really neat.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Oh,
so the container stays on Earth. It goes to the station.
The container is not going to space right now.
Is the obvious Skynet reference ever get old? Curious.
I'm intrigued by it. So many people were like, can I have this in my driveway? Could I have my own container running Azure in my yard?
Yeah, you'll have your kid living in a tiny house in your driveway, and right next to it will be an Azure data center so he can play Call of Duty and not take down your Netflix.
Now, just out of curiosity, why do you containerize it? I mean, Azure's everywhere. Is it so that it's isolated from the other Azures? Or?
Well, no, I think more it's an edge.
Azure at the edge.
Yeah, it's more portability. Like, you know, they're showing pictures of it out in the desert, like in a humanitarian crisis where all the networks are down, you drop this in so that all the humanitarian organizations can have a way to network and communicate.
But I thought, okay, so it's not the storage part of Azure. It's the controller. I mean, I thought the whole point of a cloud is you don't have to have a physical presence. You just have to have an internet connection.
Well, you have to have your data center, right?
But Microsoft has a few of those, I would imagine.
They do.
Yeah, but they're going Azure. So this is something where when all is said and done, you could probably drive it to a place where there is connectivity and then sync everything back up to, you know, and
okay. Yeah. So it has its own closed.
It is.
System.
It's its own self-contained data center.
Okay.
In something that looks like a storage container.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
I know. Somebody else said today on Twitter, you know, this is perfect for when we have a nuclear meltdown, because then you can have all these on a railroad car and you can store them in this tunnel, and then you'll have like the perfect disaster.
Jeez, wow. You know, it'd be better in a nuclear meltdown would be a shipping container full of food.
Yeah, get us the food first.
I think at that point, our concerns get a little more basic. Yeah,
but what are you going to do if you can't get Twitter, man? It'd be a bummer, man.
It just need redundant storage for when civilization comes back.
I don't know. I'm intrigued by all these weird edge cases.
No, I think it's interesting.
No pun intended.
Yeah. I guess I can't avoid this any longer. We got to do some Xboxing.
Well, you do. As I say so often, tough. This will be short. This is really not that much.
No, don't take your time. Go for it.
Just a couple of things. So one of the big selling points of the Xbox consoles, at least, is this notion that all your backward compatible games come forward and they always are better in some way than the new consoles. You know, so they'll load faster, they'll look better. There's that auto HDR feature in the XS that I talked about last week. And Microsoft announced for the Halo Master Chief Collection in particular, which has already been updated to 4K, 60 frames a second on the Xbox One X, those will be going to 120 frames per second on the Xbox Series X and S when those consoles are released. And I think it's going to be immediate. Like, I don't think it's going to – it's not like something coming next year. I think as soon as those consoles are out, there'll be an update and you'll have that. So that's kind of cool. Speaking of the new consoles, you might be wondering what the UI is going to look like. It's going to look exactly like your Xbox looks today, because the October update for the current Xbox consoles just came out, and that will give you a peek at what that's going to look like. It's just a small refinement over the previous UI. They've been kind of tweaking it for a while now. So if you're into rounded rectangles, enjoy, because there's a lot of that going on. And maybe not coincidentally, if you're familiar with the PlayStation 4 today, and their, I think it was called, what do they call that UI, like Crossbar or something like that? Kind of like the old Media Center UI with rectangles and squares. They're rounding some rectangles too. It looks a lot, it looks pretty similar, honestly. It's kind of a cross between the old PS4 interface and the new, now I'll call it the current Xbox interface, but I think the one thing that Sony has always gotten right is their UI is streamlined and quick, and Microsoft's is not. And I suspect that will probably be the case with the new consoles, but we'll see.
We shall see.
Best prepare for the worst.
Have you ordered one? Have you received yours yet?
Received anything yet, Leo? It's very disappointing.
No pre-order in?
Nothing.
When are they going to get more, another tranche?
I know.
Yeah. Before or at launch.
It'll be the launch tranche.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be a tough holiday season for some people, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm buying a PlayStation 5, so there.
Fine.
A listener, I hope he wasn't just pulling my leg, said he pre-ordered two. And
Give me card info and I'll get that right over to you.
That's exactly what he said. What? You don't trust that?
That's not a list. That's a
All right, well, let's take a break and then we'll do the most wonderful time of the podcast, as Newman says. The back of the book is coming up. First word from our sponsor, and it's ExpressVPN. Now, I have to say that there are many reasons one would use a virtual private network. The one we always talk about is security. You know, if you're out and about at an open access point, you don't want to just join that access point. You don't know who's watching, who's listening, and a VPN protects you. It encrypts your data all the way to the VPN service. However, not a lot of us are in open Wi-Fi coffee shops these days. So I want to let you know there are other reasons you might want to use ExpressVPN. See, the same benefit accrues at home or in your mobile device. It encrypts and anonymizes your data to keep it from unwanted outside snoops. And that could be even your mobile carrier or your ISP. They can see what you're doing, and they often sell it for marketing. You want to use ExpressVPN every time you're online. And you know the beauty part? Yeah, you can put ExpressVPN on your iOS or Android device or your Windows or Mac or your Linux box, but you can also put it on your router, your smart TV, your iPad. Everywhere you are, ExpressVPN can be with you, protecting you. I want to emphasize, however, that when you're using a VPN, you're just kind of kicking the security and privacy road can down the road, because you also have to trust the VPN provider. That's why it's really important to do your research and to pick the best VPN provider, one that protects your privacy. And that's why I recommend ExpressVPN. I'm not the only one. If you search for ExpressVPN, you'll see it's the number one rated VPN provider on the market, review after review after review. Partly because we know they take their privacy policy very seriously. They have independent third-party audits. Not only their privacy policy, but this very cool trusted server technology they use, which means the server, the VPN server, spins up when you log in. They have 100 countries all over the world, one close to you, no doubt. That's the one that it will do. It uses a smart technology to find the fastest one. Usually that's the closest to you. When you get to there, it spins it up. It's in RAM only, can't write to the hard drive. It's sandboxed. And when you leave, it goes away, leaving no trace of your visit. And by the way, that has also been audited, and they said, yes, it's exactly what it does. ExpressVPN keeps you private. Keeps you private. And another reason why you want to choose it's important who you choose and why you want to choose ExpressVPN. They devote enough resources, enough bandwidth to their servers. They have enough servers out there that there is no speed penalty. Sometimes people say, I don't want to use a VPN, it's too slow. ExpressVPN is fast enough. You can watch HD video content from anywhere in the world. I love that. Zero lag, zero latency. You'll put it on, you'll turn it on, and you'll forget it's there. I do that all the time. Take action. Protect yourself with ExpressVPN. Right now, you can get an extra 3 months when you buy a year. That's the most. That's the best deal, the most economical way to get ExpressVPN. Buy a year, get 3 months, get 15 months for the price of 12 when you go to expressvpn.com/windows. Of course, there's a money-back guarantee. If for any reason it doesn't work perfectly for you, it will. It is amazing. expressvpn.com/windows. Put it on everything. Protect your privacy. Keep yourself secure. ExpressVPN.com/windows. Paul Thurrott has our tip of the week. And this is the one I'm listening to carefully.
Yeah, two tips today instead of an app pick. Both are related to Windows 10 20H2. So if you are running Windows 10 version 19.03 or newer, you can check for updates and you might get it through Windows Update. If you're running 20.04, your chances are very, very good. I bet most people will get it.
And as I said, I just went from 19.09 to 20H2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
That was the, what was on the USB key. That's what I installed.
And there's a good tip right there. I mean, if you're not seeing it, make sure your drivers are up to date, and that might require a third party app from your, I guess it's a first party app from your PC maker, depending on the PC. However, for people who listen to this podcast and are on the more technical side and don't want to wait or don't care and aren't worried about any problems that might occur, you can go to, let me get the exact address here. I think it's microsoft.com/software-download/Windows 10. And you can either download the installation media in ISO format, which has been updated for 20H2, or you can run the update assistance, and that will run you through a wizard that will get you upgraded to 20.04 now. That's been all updated. 20H2. That's all been updated for the new version.
Nice.
So you can do that.
Lovely.
Yeah. And the second tip is related to that new Alt plus Tab functionality that that we mentioned before.
So there used to be an icon in my taskbar for workspaces.
Yeah.
That's gone, right? Or was replaced with that activity thing?
No, it's still there. It's called Task View. If you don't see it, you can right-click the taskbar and re-enable it.
Oh, yeah, Task View. Task View. Okay, so I didn't. Yeah, but see, I don't. That's not what exactly what I want, or is it?
Right. No. Well, I don't know. What do you want? what do you mean?
Well, it does show me my desktops. So okay, they just changed the icon. It used to be a square with another rectangle.
That's right. They did change. Okay. It. So yeah.
Looks like a ladder.
Yeah, now it looks like a ladder with a
Well, I think it's meant to show that activity history, right? So
yeah, and see, that's what I took it for, and that's what I didn't care about because I don't have Windows tracking my activities.
So Windows, yeah, the virtual desktop stuff is kind of hidden in there, and I don't know why. I don't, whatever. So that's what used to be Windows Flip 3D. You know, you can also access that screen by doing Windows Key plus Tab, right? That brings it up.
And that's what you told me, and that works great. And then I can add desktops. What I would love is, can I save this setup? Because this is how I'm going to want to do it every time I have a show.
I believe it saves automatically.
Automatically. Nice.
Yeah.
Love that.
It didn't used to. That was new of, I don't know, 1909 or 1903. I don't remember. But they should save
this. This is a habit I got with the iPad at first and then do it on Mac, which is I like workspaces because I can go full screen with whatever app and then Windows control left or right arrow, I go to the next full screen. And so I'm always at full screen. It's just nice on a laptop. But I can quickly move from workspace to workspace. I really like that.
Yeah, and even on the laptop you have that doesn't have a touch screen, I don't know how old it is.
I can use the taskbar. It's 3 years old.
Well, you can use the touchpad gestures.
Touchpad,
right, like you do on the, on the Mac.
Yeah, it works fine,
Yeah, that should work fine.
Yeah.
But with regards to All Plus Tab, which is the old Win key, which is, doesn't have all that other stuff, right? It doesn't have the activity history. It doesn't have the virtual desktop stuff. If you upgrade to 20H2 and you're a little taken aback by this new functionality where tabs from your browser are appearing in this Alt Tab list, or maybe you love it and you want more than five or whatever, you want to configure it differently. This is how you do that. So you open the Settings app, which is Windows Key plus I, navigate to System, and then to Multitasking, and you will see a new Alt-Tab entry in there. And you've got four choices. The default is Open Windows and five most recent tabs in Edge. You can change that to Windows and three most recent. You can change it to All Tabs in Edge if you're crazy. Or you could change it to Open Windows only if you prefer the way it used to work, which I happen to.
Okay.
Teach their own. You can do your own thing if you want. You're wrong, but it's okay.
And by the way, your phone still working.
Okay, but this is just 1 hour. You gotta wait.
See what tune you're singing next week, look for it.
All right. I think an enterprise pick of the week would be in order with Ms. Mary Jo Foley.
Yeah, so this is kind of interesting. Microsoft announced this week they're going to be the partner with the CTA to produce CES 2021, the digital event. And that led me to think, so is Microsoft now like selling itself as a consultant to people who want to do big virtual events? And the answer is yes, they are. So if you are an enterprise and you are thinking of putting on a really big virtual event and you want to see how a really big company has managed to do that with events like Ignite and Inspire and Build, you can hire Microsoft to help you. They, of course, will bring along their own infrastructural technology. Like they're going to try to get you to use Teams and the Power Platform and Dynamics and Azure. But yeah, they're definitely out there selling themselves this way. They have a press release up about the digital CES 2021, and they say, we cannot wait to apply all of our learnings to the creation of the CES 2021 experience. So yeah, they are out there trying to say, we will show you how we did the digital events and help you do your own.
So you're a writer. Does learnings, the word learnings, does that bother you? Is that an enterprise?
Such a terrible word.
It's an enterprise
word.
Yeah.
This is a Microsoft word.
As opposed to learning, which is a collective noun.
Yes. I know. Learnings. They love learning.
Take these learnings and apply them.
It sounds like Borat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Learnings.
That's nice. I got learnings.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yep. But I used it just because.
Well, it's enterprise talk. E-speak.
I never have used it, I don't think, in an article. And if I have, I should get a rap on the knuckles.
Run this up the tent pole and you know, get all my ducks in a row, pull a few strings, and then
You know, it's really hard to
stop at Fort Leo. So
Merlin,
I gotta go.
Merlin Mann can go for like a minute doing that, just buzzword after buzzword after buzzword. It's so funny.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what have we learnings here today?
What are our learnings?
What are learnings? How about a code name?
Yes, we have a code name.
Yes.
I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this one correctly either. It's a day of mispronunciations for me. Akri, A-K-R-I.
That sounds Greek.
Anybody know? Yes, it is a Greek.
Well, then I think you're saying it right.
Okay. Akri, or Project Akri, as it also is being called by Microsoft, is about Kubernetes. Akri translates to edge in Greek. So Project Akri is about a Kubernetes interface for the edge, because you can't run Kubernetes on an edge device. You know, Kubernetes is kind of big, unwieldy. You're orchestrating containers and all that kind of stuff. That's not really something you think about putting on an edge device, or as they call it, a leaf device. I never heard that term. I'm like, okay, leaf device. Akri is about producing a connection between edge devices and Kubernetes so that you can connect to Kubernetes from your edge device.
Certainly.
Yeah. Certainly. Yeah, they said to me, Akri, it's like an acronym for a Kubernetes interface for the edge. And I'm like, wait, that isn't an acronym, right? I'm like, A-K, there's an I. I'm like, but no E.
Okay.
Okay, anyway. Akri is, if you care about Kubernetes and you think it might be something you want to use with an edge device, you want to probably check out this newly open sourced project from Microsoft that you can read about on their blogs and check out.
Project Akri.
Yes.
I need a beer.
Yes. So let's do a timely beer pick of the week.
Okay.
Evil Twin. I voted today is the name of the beer.
Oh, I love it.
I voted
is it
today
a bitter pill of a beer?
It's a pale ale in this case, with two of my favorite hops, Mosaic and Citra. But what's cool about this beer is there is a joint brewery project across the United States created by Tired Hands Brewing. If you go to ivotedbeer.com, you can see they posted a recipe that they want other brewers to make and a can design they want them to use.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and so proceeds are going to advocacy organizations like Headcount, Common Chorus, League of Women Voters, ACLU, Democracy Works, and they're trying to encourage people to vote. But the recipe is very good. They made a double dry hopped American pale ale with this recipe. So yeah, extra hoppy pale ale. Like 5% or so.
The kind of beer Paul would not drink.
You know, it's not the
not
hoppiest.
With your mouth and not in this lifetime.
I think I like pale ales, and I like the theme of I voted today. And I already did vote, in fact, by
so
absentee
I.
ballot.
In fact, what I love, and I think this is true in many jurisdictions, our Sonoma County registrar, you sign up. I think in all of California you could do this. I mean, maybe in your states, you sign up and you get a text when they receive, when the post office receives the ballot, then they get a text. And I got a text a couple of days ago saying,
you got your text when the GOP dumps it in the trash.
Yeah, it's in the trash now. And no, I got a text saying we have your ballot and it will be counted. And that's a pretty nice feeling.
It is.
It's really exciting.
We have to proactively check it in New York. But I saw they had mine and it was legal and
nice. They didn't, they didn't say like we looked at it and the signature matches or anything like that. And I'm hoping all of that will be okay.
There was a dangling Chad, so we threw it away.
Well, I did, I seal it up, right? Because you have a security envelope and you sign it and you put the flap down, you seal it. And then I found the second page of the ballot on my desk and I went, oh, crud. So I carefully unsealed it, put the second page in and then taped it down. I hope they don't take that the wrong way.
Oh, man.
Tampered ballot.
It looks like it was tampered with. It looks like somebody got it, opened it.
I forgot that I had signed up for this, and I tried to do it again, and they were like, no, you can't vote twice, Thurrott.
I did that too. I accidentally requested two ballots, but by accident, and I'm like, they're like, nope, only one.
Okay.
I'm like, yeah, that's what I want.
It's supposed to work that way. It works. It's good.
Yep.
I have voted by mail for years. I mean, probably 10
I've never
years.
Done this. It's the first time ever.
It's great.
Yeah, me too.
What I often do is I'll get the ballot and I'll mark it, and then I hold it, and then on election day, I kind of like going to the polling place and thanking the poll workers, and it's a nice feeling. And so
normally
I just bring
like
it and I put it in. This time, because of COVID, I'm not going to do that. Well, I know I'm not because I mailed it. And I was a little nervous about mailing it. And I thought, well, which is worse, putting it in a box at the, you know, recreation center, the unattended box, or putting it in a post box? And I thought, you know, I put it in the mailbox. And, you know, it worked out great. They have it now, so.
That's good. Right.
Yeah, nice. I'm pretty happy. It's a good feeling. Have you voted, Paul, yet, or are you still holding on to the ballot?
It's sitting in my kitchen. We're going to do that this week.
Yeah, it's a nice thing for the family.
What if you change your mind, though? I mean, aren't you worried about that?
Yeah, I know.
No.
Yeah, normally I would wait. Like, well, there is a debate tomorrow. Everything could, you know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, I just, there's a couple of things I'm not sure about.
Yeah.
I'm on the line
on a lot of things.
Who are these people?
Yeah. I voted for Kanye. That's okay, right? What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. No big deal. You got it.
Normally, I would kind of, I mean, I did all the research, you know, I went on Ballotpedia, read, and we have in California the worst statute, this ballot proposition thing. It's spreading throughout the country now, but it takes not a relatively like, I don't know, 100,000 signatures to get on the ballot. So there's all these weird things. And there's one that Mark Zuckerberg put on there. And there's, there's one that, you know, this California Privacy Act, which is much stronger than the one that's already enacted. It's the same guy, Alistair McTaggart. He's a good Scotsman, and he put it on the ballot, and he said, this one didn't go far enough with the assembly, so he's doing another. But then somebody said, yeah, but look at it, because if it were really that bad, wouldn't, like, Google and Facebook and everybody be spending money to oppose it? And they're not.
They're trying not to draw attention to it.
Yeah, pay no attention to it. I asked Cory Doctorow, who works in the Electronic Frontier Foundation and is my trusted advisor on this, and he said, I don't know. He said, I'm Canadian. I don't know. I said, what, Cory? You got to tell me. He said, I have friends, strong privacy advocate friends who've gone both ways. I don't know. There's no right answer on this one, Leo. So I don't know. I voted yes. I said, we need more privacy. What could possibly go wrong? More privacy.
Right.
Nothing
Europe
wrong.
Too, the quickening.
Yeah. Every time I mention GDPR, we have a fan. He's on the Twit community, www.twit.community, the big D. And he says, Leo, every time you mention GDPR, you get it wrong. The cookies box has nothing. No, he didn't say it has nothing to do with it. He says it's gotten better or something. I don't know.
Well, it can only get better.
It can only get better.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's horrific.
Anyway, we will all vote.
The best part of not going to Europe this year, not dealing with that
GDPR. Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, California,
like, hey,
now.
I know you were just on this website 17 minutes ago, but we need to accept this cookie thing again.
Yep.
Somebody should write an automatic cookie acceptor script. Yeah.
Oscar the Grouch.
Oscar. Yeah. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, look at them. Aren't they beautiful?
Or don't. You
aren't
know.
They beautiful? Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com. That's where his, he writes about Windows. And be a premium member because there's lots of great stuff in the premium section. And of course, Hedy and Brad and the whole team there. It's a really good site, Thurrott.com. His books at leanpub.com, The Field Guide to Windows 10. I say books plural, but really, is it just that? Or do you have...
It's down to the one.
Just the one now. You can't get the Delphi 3 Super Bible there.
I'm trying to get it updated.
Part 5.
Well, I got it anyway.
And, the object isn't going to be inherited by itself. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, God. That is, by the way, if you get the field guide, it's updated regularly. I presume 20H2 and H3 and H4 and H5, they'll all be in there. Get the posters. They're wonderful. I love the posters. Mary Jo Foley writes an awful lot at her ZDNet blog, all about Microsoft.com. And as you can see, if you listen to the show, you can tell she's got great contacts inside Redmond. So she often breaks stories there, all about Microsoft.com. Together, they band together every Wednesday around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. And we record Windows Weekly. You can actually watch us do it live. We stream all of our studio work. So you can watch, and that's at twit.tv/live. There's audio and video. If you're doing that, chat room, irc.twit.tv, they're also in there watching at the same time. So it's kind of the back channel. I watch it and, you know, get show ideas, title ideas, things like that. My best lines all come from the chat room. If you are not available of a, you know, Tuesday morning or afternoon or evening, well, you can always get on-demand versions. I say Tuesday, Wednesday. You can get on-demand versions of the show on our website, twit.tv/ww. There's also a YouTube channel. You can subscribe there. Best thing to do would be actually to get a podcast app. Makes it a lot easier. Spotify's fine, Stitcher, Slacker, you know, Google's podcasts, Apple's podcasts. There's dozens of them. Pocket Cast is the one I use. Subscribe, and that way you'll get it as soon as it's available of a Wednesday evening. And that concludes the business portion of this show. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. And I'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. Anything to report? Are we going to be, are you going out of town?
No, but it'll be the day after earnings next week.
Earnings, or as Microsoft calls them, learnings.
Learnings and earnings. We'll bring our learnings about their earnings.
I think it's ever happened, right? That earnings are the
day before
the show.
Yeah, it is.
That's going to be good.
It is going to be good, actually.
Because usually it's like, oh, it's coming up in 15 minutes. We can't talk about it till next week.
The next day. And then the next week we're like, oh, right, earnings was last week.
Good.
It feels like a million years ago.
Next week, Microsoft learnings.
Learnings and earnings.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Want more Twit? Well, check out Smart Tech Today. It's at twit.tv/STT. It's the show where Matthew Casinelli and I cover everything there is to know about smart tech. It's automation. It's connected devices. It's smart home. It's all those goodies and so much more. We get the news. We get the latest devices. We do reviews. Everything. You got to check it out. twit.tv/STT for Smart Tech Today.